Halton here. At MSA, our health and safety drives them to develop advanced safety equipment with performance and protection in perfect balance, like Globe Athletics, the latest innovation in turnout gear. Developed as athletic gear for firefighters, Athletics uses unique stretch fabrics that provide body contoured fit for unprecedented range of motion and flexibility. It's lighter weight, less bulky, and provides the protection you need from your turnout gear. Get the full story at msafire.com/globe.
Good evening, everybody. It's Danny Sheridan, and welcome to another edition of First New Battalion Chief. And I think by the intro, you're probably expecting Alice Cook to do some kind of deep reading of some kind of novel or some kind of British talk show. But anyway, this is First New Battalion Chief, and tonight I'm very honored to have some very special guests. Just over the weekend, we were invited down to a experiment down with the UL down in the Delaware County Training Academy with the UL Firefighters Safety Research Institute. And I said that all in one breath, so it's a mouthful. And it was, you know, as usual, UL is on the cutting edge. I did write an article recently about the boot camp that we did at the ROC that involved the FDNY. Boston, L.A., Houston. I don't know, Frank is on. He can remember the rest of the cities. We had a bunch of cities. Atlanta, I think, was there. I'm not sure. But it was, it was just UL running the show and us there to talk about things. And the crux of the article was basically that I wrote about was actually Frank came up with the idea. It was evolution, not revolution. And it seems in the fire service we're reluctant to change. We're very set in our ways, and if we have changed, some of the old timers are very reluctant. And what I like about UL is that they give us the why, to what we do. And it's very easy, the old timers pass things down to the young guys. This is why we do this, this is why we do that, this is what we do here. And there's never the why, I think there's an old Indian proverb. It says, if you tell me, I may remember. If you show me, possibly I'll remember better. But if you involve me, I'll never forget. And I feel like sometimes with UL that this is could almost be their mantra, because here we are at the academy. And what I like about what they do is they do it the same way every time, all the time. I think when we get into it, the guys will explain what they're doing. But, we could go to the same building 10 times. I've been, when I was a fireman, I can remember going to the same building over and over. And no fire is the same. Things change. And what they're trying to do is to replicate real scenarios. They actually built a house, had actually heating ducts. It had real furniture. It was nothing was fake. It was all real. And I don't want to get too much into it because I'd rather have those guys explain. So I want to welcome our team tonight, and I'll start with Frank. Frank has been on the show a few times already, and I don't know if I spoke to him last time. He had gotten promoted, but I'll just repeat myself. Frank got promoted again. Now he's wearing two stars. He's the Deputy Assistant Chief at the head of the Fire Academy with the New York City Fire Department. So, Frank, welcome. Again, congratulations on your new promotion, and I'm very happy that you're with us tonight.
Thank you, Dan. I'm happy to be here on the show. And especially that we have our two other guests with us as well. So it's definitely going to be a good show.
Exactly. So, Frank, real quick, we went down for the first time. You've been, it's your brainchild. You had the vision for this. I guess COVID was the crux behind it, the impetus for trying to come up with creative ways to train. And I think last time we spoke on the radio, I can't remember if it was two shows ago, this was not even, it was just a concept. It was just a theory. And, you know, you had the vision for it. You got the team together and you put it together, and now it's taken root, and you know, it's becoming part of now the norm with the FDNY, this remote tactical training. So maybe you could explain to the audience exactly what we're doing with the remote tactical training at the FDNY.
Sure. Thanks, Dan. And yeah, COVID definitely accelerated the implementation of the remote tactical training and some of the technology. So what the remote tactical training unit is we broadcast out on WebEx. So that's a two-way function, so you could ask questions while we're broadcasting live. And, so, you know, when we do it in the FDNY, we may have one fire company come out to the fire academy, or one of the things Dan's doing now is he's going out on location, having one company and maybe another member there, and they broadcast out whatever they're doing. Right now they're doing engine ops in a rehab building. And all the other companies, they watch live, so we're able to really, as a force multiplier, train a lot of units. So this past Sunday, we took our remote tactical training for the first time on the road, as Dan mentioned, to the Delaware County Emergency Service Training Center, just outside of Philadelphia. And along with UL, we were able to provide our members with a unique opportunity to participate and watch like a behind-the-scenes look at live fire training, live fire experiment, not training. And it's one experiment that's in a part of 20 of this larger study. So it's interesting. We had great success with this. A lot of our members tuned in and were watching it, and we got a lot of feedback. I got emails, and they you know, we want results right now, right? So we're a very result-driven profession. And I had people saying, hey, do we have the results yet? And, like, I know, knowing the researchers and the dedication that they put into this, you know, it takes time. I mean, they've been working on this project for months. And I know, and really a credit to both the research engineers we have on the line with us tonight, Keith Stakes and Craig Weinschenk. You know, these guys, they have been working day and night every single day. And the fact that, you know, they're still, I believe, they're still out on location. They're probably both in a hotel tonight because I'm pretty sure they're not done yet. And here they are at night after a very long day. I spoke to Craig a couple of times today, and they're willing to be on this show. So that is a testament to the culture and the dedication of the folks that UL continues to recruit. And these the two we have on tonight I don't even want to call them the rising stars in UL, because I think they're I mean, they're still rising, but they are phenomenal research engineers. But that is generally what this what our remote tactical training does, Dan. So I think let's turn it over to these guys to kind of let them tell us what's going on. But again, thank you so much to Craig and Keith for joining us tonight. They have to be exhausted.
Right. Thanks, Frank. So without further ado, then, Craig, Keith, if you want to just introduce yourselves, whoever wants to go first, and then we'll get into some questions and we'll talk about what's actually going on.
All right. Perfect. Thanks, Chief. Again, my name is Keith Stakes. I'm one of the research engineers here with UL and currently with Craig Weinschenk, and we're tasked with making these experiments happen. And again, this is for the DHS search and rescue project. But as far as background goes, have an engineering degree from the University of Maryland and have been with UL for about 5.5 years now.
Thanks, Keith. And Craig?
I'm Craig Weinschenk, also a research engineer here, mechanical engineer from the University of Texas at Austin, and been at UL now, it'll be 4 years on Halloween.
Exactly. So I have to be honest with you. I'm not really, no pun intended, I'm not trying to blow smoke, but I really walked out of there I've been on the job for a little while, and I learned, I think, two or three things that day. And, you know, just to give you a little background, so there's certain tenets that we were taught when we came on the job. And, you know, let's be honest, for myself, it was kind of a badge of honor to take a beating. Like, I remember my dad and my two uncles getting together and talking about certain guys, what great firemen they were because they could take such a feed, you know. And I mentioned to one of the researchers that, and I think he was pretty surprised. I'm not sure if it was Craig or Gavin or one of the other guys, but, you know, most of our line of duty deaths in the 50s and in the 40s were, sorry about that, technical difficulty there. Most of our line of duty deaths were due to smoke poisoning. You know, they didn't have air packs. I mean, even when I came on the job, the culture was, you know, don't wear a mask. You know, like, be a man, take a beating. And I think I'm kind of horrified, actually. I'm waiting to see what the results are of these tests. Any guys, whoever wants to take this question first, just explain to us exactly what we were doing on Sunday.
Sure. So we'll kind of give you the high-level 10,000-foot view of what we're doing out here. Again, we're located just outside of Philadelphia in Sharon Hill, Pennsylvania. And we kind of have a unique setup here where we lease space from the training academy and the board of directors, if you will, that runs the place. We're fortunate to be able to have all of our equipment here, all of our instrumentation that allows us to perform these experiments, and then the grounds to be able to actually build structures and do the live fire testing. So on site here currently, we have two, amongst a variety of other buildings, we have two roughly 1,500 square foot ranch homes that are set up to be identical to one another. One we perform bedroom fires in, and the other we perform both kitchen and living room fires in. And this is all part of the larger project that was DHS funded, so thank you to them for being gracious enough to allow us to perform this research. But it's focused on both size up and search and rescue tactics. So it's twofold in the sense that we want to try and get a better understanding of what the building and fire is telling us when we get there to be able to help identify what tactics we might choose. And then as a follow-up to that, once we're actually engaged in the tactics, what's our best means to search a structure based on where the fire is, what the structure looks like, what time of day it is, so on and so forth. And then if we do find a victim, how do we get them out? Do we isolate and leave them in place? Do we take them out more local to where they were found ventilation opening, or do we bring them back to the front door? And how does that pair with suppression and ventilation as those are ongoing? So again, it's looking at those three things across the board, kind of from when we get there as the fire service until the any potential victim might be out of the structure. But in total, we're going to be doing 20 experiments from a couple weeks ago through December. And again, we're pretty much working nonstop day in and day out. And, trying to make it all happen.
You know, you made a point, and you know, something I have to be honest, most of us in the FDNY, and I got to see one question. I would just see if I could put Frank back on. I think he got muted for a second. And Frank, you there? Just give me a mic check. Yeah,
I'm here.
We were taught, we were actually never taught about, you know, how to take a victim out. You know, basically the mindset was, you grab the person and then you just go the same way you came in. And some of the tests that you're doing is amazing, because I'm being totally honest. I never understood the full ramifications of some of the toxins that are in the air. And I understand that you'll be measuring some of the gases as well, besides the couplings for the heat and stuff.
Yeah, so in each one of these houses, we have about 180 channels of instrumentation, and that instrumentation ranges from our thermocouples measuring temperature to pressure probes to heat flux gauges, which kind of measure a energy flux, so to speak, to a unit area or to a potential occupant. We also have velocity measurements and gas measurements. And the unique thing about these experiments is, for the first time, we've really been able to kind of map out an entire structure with gas measurements. We have 16 discrete measurements throughout each house, and each one of those measurement points is going to give us oxygen, carbon dioxide, and carbon monoxide. So combined, those three gases allow us to assess basically a toxic dose that a occupant or firefighter might receive if they were not on air. And the really interesting part now is if we move between each one of those measurement locations, we can start to develop what does that exposure look like on the pathway out from a particular point of origin. So if we have an occupant on a bed, what does it look like to bring them from the bed down to the 1 foot level, all the way out the hallway and through the front door? Additionally, we have those measurements at the 3 foot level. So if you were going to now carry a victim versus or an occupant versus drag an occupant, how fast would you need to carry that occupant at a higher elevation in the space compared to the lower elevation in order to overcome kind of that difference in exposure? Because we know those gases fill from the top down. So each time we incrementally move higher in the space, we have a higher potential exposure not only for toxic gases but also for heat. And so we've got those temperature measurements and those heat flux measurements kind of coupled throughout the structure in order to map pathways for the different occupants within the structure. Then as we toggle different vents, we can start to see what is the impact of isolation or non-isolation, what does it mean to break a window for VES, what does it mean to close the fire room door or close the front door when you make entry. Kind of all those different tactics that are in the toolbox, we can start to quantify and give some measurements to the relative differences between them.
Wow. So just maybe Craig, could you set up the what did the experiment actually look like? I remember seeing there was the initial ignition room, and then there were two other rooms. Can you kind of explain to the audience exactly what that experiment looked like?
Sure thing. So when you come in the front door of our experimental structures, you have a living room and a kitchen kind of front to back, so side one to side three. About midway down that point, you've got a hallway that runs from side two to four. And that hallway branches off to four bedrooms. Two of those bedrooms have attached bathrooms, and two of them just have closets. That's your kids' rooms. They're not getting the ensuite, so to speak. And so on the side one of the house, we had the basically two bedrooms. One in the 1-2 corner was basically isolated to start. The one kind of adjacent to that, still on the side one, was our fire room. And across the hall, we had two open bedrooms. We'll call those bedrooms two and three. So in this experiment, we ignited in bedroom four, which was that one kind of in the middle of our space on side one. We let that fire reach flashover, and so post flashover now we've got, you know, flames out the bedroom windows that have failed, and we're starting to get flames into the hallway. At that point, we started our operations and we simulated two crews entering bedrooms two and three respectively, so they would break the window and make entry. In this particular experiment, the bedroom furthest from the fire room we isolated, and we did not isolate the bedroom almost directly across the hall from the fire room. From there, the crew that made entry to the isolated bedroom crossed the hall and entered our initially closed door room. So this allowed us to kind of VES beyond the room of origin, or the room of entry, rather. And basically, we measured temperatures throughout. And then upon completion of those operations, we had interior suppression through the front door down the hall. And at that point, the room of origin was still post flashover. And we had, you know, basically flashover conditions in our exposure room that was non-isolated, with flames coming out of that side three window as well.
So, Craig, if I can remember correctly, we did a walkthrough before the actual experiment, and there was a bathroom towards the, let's say, I'm going to call it the exposure delta side, or the four side. And it was out of the flow path. Is it too early to give us any kind of preliminary, like, results of what that victim, let's say, withstood in that bathroom with the door closed, or is it still too early to tell?
Yeah, I'd say it's a little early. and mainly because I haven't analyzed it yet, or we haven't analyzed
it
yet, rather. So for some perspective, when, you know, you guys were here Sunday, we conducted, you know, our bedroom fire Monday morning. We prepped and did a kitchen living room fire. And then now we're on Tuesday, and we've been overhauling the structures, working with contractors to rebuild them. We'll start refurnishing an instrumentation over the next 2 days to then burn again Friday and Saturday. To the extent of data analysis, it's right now we run some checks to make sure nothing failed. So did everything function properly? Do we have, you know, any anomalies in the data such that we need to do further investigation of that instrumentation? But we haven't really dove into the data yet. And the one piece I'll add is I think one of the key pieces, you know, anytime we're doing one of these larger series of experiments is each experiment has tremendous value. The real big takeaways come from looking at our series of experiments. So how do we, you know, that bathroom itself is unique and very interesting, but what does that bathroom look like when we compare it against the experiment where we isolated that door versus non-isolated that door? So what does the change in exposure look like as part of the tactics? Or what does it mean to conduct an interior search versus a VES into that room? So we can start to look at all the different tactics stacked on top of one another to really tell kind of the true story or the true comparison of what we're trying to achieve.
So, Dan,
can I comment on that?
Yeah, I was going to just ask you to comment. Thanks, Frank. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and I think, Craig, that's what's fascinating about this study, right? The size up and search and rescue, you know, these 20 experiments. So we were there for experiment number 4. And, you know, you talk about we could go in the front door, make a great move, get to a victim, and maybe the best tactic is to isolate them. Now, we know that, right? But do we employ that, right? We'll take them out the same exact way. And I think that maybe this study, the results will show us that we have to be more mindful of that VEIS, that isolate. And that was what this study that we saw, this experiment, this fire, did on Sunday. And, you know, so I spent some time talking to the lady Shruti from, I believe she's from the University of Illinois, but she's working with the Illinois Fire Service Institute, who I believe is collaborating with you guys on some of this. So this was the second time that I had spoken to her because she's such a wealth of information. And we were talking about hydrogen cyanide and the laser and how they're measuring that. And you think about just talking about hydrogen cyanide with an ideal H of 50 part per million. And, you know, you could VEIS and have a lower amount in there, obviously, compared to what you're going to have in the fire room. Depending what's burning, we know, you know, we can get super high levels where you could go in, make the greatest move to get a victim out, take them out the same way, bring them through an environment, and make it where their chances of survival drop because we weren't mindful of the route we took to get out of the structure. I think that's eye-opening, and I can't wait for the results of this, you know, of all 20 of the experiments, because that's really how it gets its validation, right? And I anticipate that in early 2021, when will we see results? Would you guess?
It's funny, both Keith and I just chuckled a little bit. Obviously, we'd love to have that time frame. I honestly, you know, would hope that we can get somewhere in the first half of 2021, but one never knows when things pop up on our calendar and you know, when Steve or Dan ask for the next thing up and you know, some things get you know, pushed or slid a little bit. But I mean, our goal is to analyze and turn this around and get it back to you guys as soon as possible.
All right. So
I know we are Frank. Sometimes the cause of the delay in the FDNY, because we always add a lot of different questions. I'm on the phone with Dan regularly asking him, hey, what about this or what about that? So I can certainly understand that.
Right. So here's a question.
Go ahead, Craig.
Go.
I was just going to say that, you know, a lot of these, this test matrix of 20 experiments was really built kind of with our project technical panel. So we have 20 firefighters from around the country, some three that rolled over from our coordinated project, so they have some exposure to kind of what research with the fire service is like, and so they were able to kind of, you know, interact a little bit more with the new folks on the panel, and we've been working with them for the last, you know, 18 months or so. Really kind of honing in on what the – how do we get the most information out of the experiments that we have the capability to run. And so it's been really great to, you know, make sure that, you know, they're holding us in check on, yeah, this is – these are the right ones we want to see. Or, you know, if you guys tweak this or modify this experiment, we can get a lot more information. Or, you know, here's some real-life scenarios we're seeing. Can you help us explain some of these things? And so that's been really fantastic. This tech panel has been wonderful. And, you know, they'll be coming out to you know, our site here in the next round of visits, obviously with all the social distancing and masks in place, so that you know, UL has been fantastic with setting us up with all the precautions. But we're really excited to get these guys on site and get them to see these experiments and get their feedback to kind of really hone in on a great set of tests here.
Right. So for the UL guys, your ventilation experiments were very instrumental in us changing our ventilation tactics in the FDNY. And I get a question for Frank now. So Frank, going forward, do you see the same thing happening with these experiments? Do you think at some point we're going to change some of our maybe search and rescue and some of our truck tactics?
Well, so I would say I'll steal the line from Craig. It's too early to say if we'll what changes we'll have here, right? So I'll say we'll go in to this research like we do with all of the research, with an open mind, that beginner's mind, right? That you're open to new ideas and to adjust. And like we have, so our relationship with the folks at UL go back to 1998 for Dan Majakowski and 2001 for Steve Kerber. And all of the research that they've conducted, we have in many cases validated the procedures. And as you pointed out, Dan, that we've made some adjustments to others. And we will continue to do that. And we've done that even based on the most recent report that if you listeners haven't read, they should certainly go on and read it. And that's the study with the acquired structures, which I was a tech panel member. You know, there's so much good information in there. And that's when, after you read these reports and you match that with your experience and your staffing and your built environment, then you should be making the adjustments to your procedures. So it would be premature to say what we would do, but I would venture to say that, you know, that it'll have some impact because most of, if not all of their research has.
Exactly. So, you know, a lot was, it was overwhelming in a sense. So much was thrown at us while we were there. But, Craig, did I hear this correctly? At one point, did you mention that the CO levels could be as high as 50,000 parts per million? Because I know our meters peg out at 1,000 parts per meter. Parts per million, and 50,000 parts per million just sounds like astronomical. Did I hear that correctly?
Well, that's as high as ours measure. So that doesn't necessarily mean that the CO values can't be higher, but at the moment, that's kind of the upper limit of our sensors. So, yes, and also they could be higher.
So just in layman's terms, then 50,000 parts per million sounds to me like it would be almost lethal, like with like one breath. Or I'm not sure. I'm trying to put that in perspective, like the 50,000 parts per million, like how much, what impact that would have on a firefighter.
Certainly, as far as gas concentrations goes, it's going to be, you know, dosage and time dependent. So you're obviously hitting on the dosage side of things, and then their time of exposure is obviously also going to play into that, which is where both our search and rescue tactics come into play, because we know the first step to decreasing their victim survivability is getting in to find them. And then once we've efficiently found them, how do we efficiently get them out? So not a direct answer to your question, but, you know, dosage and time dependent. And as far as gas concentrations goes, obviously your proximity to the fire and then your elevation within the space is also pretty critical.
Right. So, you know, going back to when I came on the fire department, you know, I can remember guys would joke about it, you know, like we'd have a smoke ache or a smoke headache, you know, and, it, you know, we laughed about it because, you know, we took a beating and it was a good job, you know. And now seeing these experiments and these reports is sobering. You know, Frank was in there speaking with the woman from Illinois, and I think she said something to the effect that 546 parts per million for 10 minutes is lethal for hydrogen cyanide. And I just think that's just like, for me, just to think that all the stuff that we've been exposed to unknowingly is just, I think this is going to be revolutionary, this study that we're doing now.
Yeah, they've been fantastic partners over the years. We've worked with Illinois Fire Service Institute in the coordinated attack project with, especially in the single family homes, looking at some of our, you know, occupant package survivability things with their skin burn work. So it's great to have them out here as part of this project as well. We look forward to syncing up all of their HCN data with, you know, with the CO, CO2, and O2 data that we're capturing throughout the structure.
Yeah, so I'm sure Frank could attest to this as well. When I came on the fire department, we used to have medical folders, right? And if you had a red dot on your folder, that means you were at this fire, the phone company fire. It was a fire that was in the East Village of New York City, and it was massive amounts of cables burning in a like a 7-story, 8-story, I guess Type 2 building. It was just the phone company. It was switching stations, and I remember reading one of the reports from the first two truck, and the officer said to the firefighters, he said, "Guys, I think we better wear our masks for this one." So you just got to think of the culture at the time in the 70s, that the masks weren't thought of as something as a necessity. And could you imagine that happening today? I just think it would just, Frank, maybe you could chime in on that.
Yeah, well, you know, your article, Dan, right? Evolution, not revolution. I mean, that sums it up. We're not, you know, first off, the fire service, they said it earlier. Craig, I think, said it earlier, that they're answering the questions that the fire service is, you know, that we're asking, right? They're not coming up with this. They're the ones that are asking it. And that tech panel is, you know, the 20 people from around, you know, the 20 firefighters from coast to coast, really. And then the three members from my group that on the coordinated attack of acquired structure panel, you know, the three, Chris Burns from Colorado Springs, Russ Gardner from SAC Metro out in California, and Steve Lopez from Dallas Fire Department. Those are three top-notch guys that were on my panel. They are now on the new panel with, you know, when they talked about the single-family dwellings that we did, we were in Beaver Creek, Ohio, and we were in Sydney, Ohio, and we met Jason Truesdale from Sydney and Dave Young, a battalion chief in Beaver Creek, and those guys were there every day. They're now on the new panel. You know, you have L.A. County represented, Clark County, Nevada, Gary, Indiana, Colorado Springs, Seattle. There's departments from all over, and it's large and small and everything in between, and that's what really drives what the research is they're doing. So when you say this is going to be revolutionary, what we're doing here, Dan, it's, you're saying that because we all have the same questions on how can we increase and improve on victim survivability, and that's what this particular set of experiments sets out to answer for us. And that's why we all want the answers as soon as possible, right? How can we do better? That's what we always should be striving to do. And as what's burning is changing and what's going on is changing, we too will change and evolve to meet the needs.
So why don't we just take a quick second? I want to, since we have a great panel here, I want to call out to the audience. If you want to call in and speak to anybody tonight on the panel, the number is 760-454-8852. And tonight we're talking with the engineers from UL, Craig Weinscheck and Keith Stakes, and as well as Deputy Assistant Chief Frank Lieb. And any questions about anything, feel free to ask. I'm here to ask them. So getting back to the studies now. So this is for UL now. So what are we going to hope to find? Are we going to find the toxicity of the certain gases, the volumes, or how's this all going to work now?
Let's see. I guess the best way to start with that is to talk a little bit about one of our possible training outputs from this series of experiments. We're looking to try and create a more interactive experience for the fire service users at the end of the day to interact and work with the data that comes out of this. And where I'm going with this is talking about kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure, if you will. So folks may be able to look at a floor plan of the house and say, if I had a victim that started in this location at this elevation and I closed the door and took them out the window, what would their end resulting exposure be? Or if they started in the bathroom on the floor and I decided to bring them through the bedroom, out into the hall, down the hall and out the front door, what would that exposure look like? What would the exposure look like if I was dragging them versus carrying them? What would their exposure be if I was moving at 1 foot per second versus 3 feet per second? So hopefully, you know, and this is going to be more attuned to the folks that really want to get into the data and interact with it, but this will kind of be the first chance for folks to be able to play with the data in that manner and say, you know, here's a scenario that's applicable to me and something that I've always wondered about, and how's that going to impact the victim at the end of the day?
So I have a comment, I guess, more of a comment for Craig. So, Craig, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to sit in the command center with you, and I was very impressed by you. You seem like you were almost like a NASA engineer, you know, with the amount of stuff that you were controlling. I think you had about from maybe 10, 15 screens that you were looking at any given time, plus graphs and all this other stuff. And you know, what amazed me is that, you know, when I saw ignition, I mean, how soon was it before we were almost into flashover? Two and a half minutes, is that right? Or 3.5 minutes, something along those lines?
Yeah, just about. I mean, from, from ignition to flashover of flames out the fire room window is about, I think, 3.5 minutes in this experiment. It ranges, you know, just based on some ambient conditions and things, but that's generally the sweet spot for these bedroom compartment fires.
Wow. So for someone like myself, I would say, well, look at how much fire has changed, but yet I would say the majority of our firefighters now couldn't really say that, because this is all they know now is the modern fire. And, you know, tying this into the gases, you know, the stuff that's being produced now from out of the country, the furniture, the different chemicals. Like, my daughter's a chemical engineer, and she tells me all the time about these different chemicals that are being put into all these products that are burning. And I guess what we're going to hopefully find from these experiments is that just exactly how toxic these things are. Because maybe Frank was right about the whole idea of the thought of dragging someone through that toxic environment is almost ludicrous. We might bring in the matter of fire, a frying pan into the fire.
Yes, and the interesting aspect of these experiments that we're kind of coupling on to the actual search side of things is looking at what the exposure would be to a fire investigator that may show up after the fire occurs and the fire department's basically taking care of business. So whether that be 1 hour after the fire, 1 day after the fire, 3 days after the fire, or 5 days after the fire, what does the exposure still look like inside the structure? So that could also be applicable to us in the fire service during overhaul operations. You know, what is the exposure to folks that are operating on the inside, even though the fire may be out and our four gas meter shows that things are relatively okay? You know, there's the notion of the fact that you could go to a structure that was on fire a week later and still smell that smell. You know, so what is in that smell at the end of the day? You know, while our four gas may show that based on our current thinking, you know, that there is no IDLH, is that really the case? So that's kind of a tie-on to this project that we're trying to get an idea through metering the structure at different times after the fire, what that might look like. That's kind of on top of what the exposure is during the fire itself.
Right. So I think
that study will be the first of its kind. That is groundbreaking. We simply, for our fire investigators and fire marshals, we don't have data that goes beyond the 72-hour mark. So that is a tremendous add-on. We've been involved, the FDNY has been involved with that part of this study from its inception. And, you know, that's something we want to be able to better protect all of our fire investigators. But not only that, it's like you mentioned, Keith, we go back, we'll go to a fire and we'll parade our firefighters through there for a couple of days afterwards, because we're trying to gain all we can. Maybe we want to point out that the fire spread through a void or some unusual layout of the apartment. And we're not always adequately protected when we're doing so. So this is all great information that we'll be able to get to better protect these folks. And I'm in the kitchen the other day with Dan Majkowski before the ignition on Sunday, and he's going through all these different plastics that are in the kitchen. There were like 11 different types of plastics, he pointed out, between the outlets, and just some of them was just the ladle that you might use to stir your pot of sauce on the stove. It's just incredible how much what is burning has changed and evolved.
Right. So Frank, I know Frank a long time, and I know Frank has become very passionate about cancer in the fire service. And, you know, I'm looking back, and I can remember taking the family station wagon down to work, getting detailed to another firehouse, catching a job, taking my turnout coat, my boots, because that's what we had at the time, was a turnout coat and boots, in the back of the station wagon with my helmet, driving home. The car smells like smoke. I come in. I take my clothes off. I throw them in the hamper. The whole house smells like smoke. And then my kids go to school the next day in that same car. And, you know, today, that would be unheard of. I saw something that I've never seen before, and I like the comment that was made. And I think for us guys, we're going to have to start thinking differently about fires, almost like someone mentioned it was like a hazmat incident. Because I noticed that you deconned with soap and water and a fire hose, a little stream, right as you came out of the burn. And I'll be honest with you, I have never seen that before. Frank, would you agree that this is something that maybe we should start even be thinking about doing ourselves?
Yeah, we are. I mean, we're starting to get there. I mean, there's departments that have been doing on-scene decon for wet decon for over 2 years. I mean, that's research that certainly UL is has been involved with from the beginning. I mean, Gavin Horn and Kenny Fent and the crew, whether it's at NIOSH or when Gavin was at Illinois, you know, they were part of it. And when we were on scene doing the burns, whether we were in Cobb County, Georgia, or we were in Beaver Creek, Ohio, there was decon set up. I mean, we were doing on scene decon in Beaver Creek. It was, I think it was 11 degrees out. And then we were in, doing decon in 90 degree weather elsewhere. So, you know, we got to do all we can to protect ourselves. The data, we now have the data. The data is clear. We need to do all we can to leave that. That's now NFPA documents now call that preliminary exposure reduction, and it's very simple to do, and you could remove greater than 80% of the contaminants on the exterior shell of the gear. That's a lot of contaminants that you're leaving on the scene rather than inhaling or absorbing through your skin.
Wow. And at least from our end, it's really not too labor intensive, and it's not too difficult to do. The biggest challenge you'd probably have to fight is trying to not unclip your regulator when you walk out the door. You know, the goal would be to walk out the door and head straight to wherever the decon station is set up, and then you get a hose down, you get a scrub, and then you start to break down your gear and get out of it, because we know from the other side of things that also staying in the gear would trap anything that might have made it through. So it's really not bad at the end of the day. You know, it takes less than 5 minutes. You walk out, go straight to decon, you know, whether it's hot or cold. You really don't end up wet on the inside if you're doing it correctly, and it just makes things better at the end of the day.
So this is a question for Keith. For Keith, how much more toxic is the smoke today than it was, let's say, 20 years ago? I mean, is it really that much more toxic, or have we been exposed to this our whole time that we've been on the job, on the fire department?
I think the easiest way to answer that is yes, it's more toxic, in the sense that most of the things in homes today are plastics. You're basically dealing with petroleum products that are turned into furniture and things that we sit on and hang on our walls versus more natural furnishings in the past. I mean, certainly any smoke is toxic, but, we're definitely in a state today where PPE is more important than ever.
Wow. This is all, you know, I guess I say you don't know what you don't know. And I think now that this has become new, and I guess I'll ask Frank the same question. Frank, is this like one of our biggest concerns now is cancer prevention in the fire department?
Well, so it's certainly our generation's time to push forward the initiatives that others have done before us, right? So in the FDNY, we have a lot of different things that we've done for cancer prevention. And 2 years ago, actually it's over 2 years, it's about 2.5 years ago now, we set up a work group to look at, a contamination reduction work group that I've been heading since its inception. And we have looked at many different things. And, you know, the two sets of gear, the annual medicals, the washing of the gear regularly, on-scene decon, all these different things. But we just have to keep furthering these along. And really, it's the educational component. So UL could do all the research they want. We could have all the research we want. If we don't educate, right, and push this information out to the firefighters, the end user, the consumer, then it winds up being wasted. And, UL has a fantastic LMS system, a learning management system platform that is very easy to navigate. And a lot of these you can have in bite-sized portions, 45 minutes, you do a segment, and you're educated on it. They have a fantastic one that talks about cancer in the fire service and cardiovascular. You know, so that's the one and two, or one and 1A killers of firefighters, is cardio-related and cancer. So a lot of the information's out there. We just got to do as good a job as we can to push it out there to make sure that our firefighters are educated young in their career so they can have a long and healthy career, so they can have a long and healthy retirement.
Yeah, wow. So for the UL guys, so is this something that we're looking about on these experiments as well, is the carcinogens that are burning, or is it just more the toxicity of the gas?
So during the experiments, we're really only capturing carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, and oxygen at the discrete locations and a couple locations with the HCN. In the post-fire investigation part that Dan and Gavin are running for the fire investigators, that's where we're starting to look at the PAHs and the VOCs, just because it's a whole different sampling method, and our equipment really isn't – we don't necessarily have that equipment for real-time measurements in a hot fire environment. So the current gas analyzers that we have, I mean, you saw those, you know, the stainless steel pipes running to the ice baths, and then that whole trailer dedicated to the analyzers. That's, you know, we have quite a large undertaking to get where we are here. You know, as the years go by, hopefully we'll continue to build out our infrastructure and start to be able to make more of these measurements real time in the fire environment.
Wow. So we only have a few minutes left. And so for the people that are listening, just a lot of people would listen to this later on. They'll download it as a podcast. Is there any opportunities for anybody to watch these experiments on YouTube or any other medium?
Yes. So the plan is that we don't have the official dates yet. We're still working through, you know, with our team, is that, you know, in the current COVID situation, it's hard for us to have an on-site media day where, you know, we'd invite everyone that we normally would say, hey, here's an open day, everyone come and see. What we're going to do is do our best to do a virtual media day. So we'll have our video team will be on site. We'll do some site walkthroughs and building walkthroughs prior to the experiments, and then also live stream the experiments. So I don't have a date at the moment, but you know, if you follow along our socials, you know, you know UL Firefighter Safety on Facebook or UL FSRI on Twitter. Jennifer, who takes care of all of that, will be sure to be communicating that frequently. So you'll, you know, if you follow along, you'll definitely be able to see when we nail down the dates that we'll be able to do that.
Very good. Okay, so yeah, we got a few minutes. So Frank, any closing thoughts before we wrap this up?
Yeah. So the only thing I'd want to add, Dan, is I was fascinated by your reaction when you were on scene and you saw the tremendous effort that went into getting this off the ground. So I'd like to hear your comments on, you know, articulate those on what you thought, right, about just the setup and the dedication of what you saw going on.
Oh, it's top shelf. I mean, I'm not just saying that because they're on with us, but I was so blown. I was so blown away by, you know, I've done a bit of, you know, drilling and, you know, with other places and, you know, you might get a few guys, but I mean, this was like, I just couldn't get my head around it. It was just, it was so professional. I mean, they had everything covered. I mean, the command center alone, I walked in, I saw Craig and I was asking him about the infrared cameras and I mean, they capture everything. I mean, that's just like, there's no, and then the more I went into the house, every time I looked somewhere else and I saw another camera or I saw another sensor and just a little detail. I mean, just to be able to close the doors with a cable, you know, it's just like everything is just like, I don't know. It's just like very on point. You know what I mean? It's just like no stone is unturned. And the knowledge, I mean, everyone I spoke to is an engineer. I mean, you know, I'm a mechanical engineer. I'm this kind of engineer. And I was like, wow. I mean, these people are like the top in their game. You know, they're not messing around. So that's what I kind of walked away with. You know, like just a totally top shelf professional operation, you know.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what we want, even by broadcasting this live to our members, to recognize the validity of the training and the dedication that so many put in for the benefit of us. And that's really, you know, a really, and we'll have the results to this eventually, just like we have all the results of all the other studies. But just to see that behind the scenes look for our members, I think was, I'll use the word of a couple people that had emailed me, was eye-opening. So it was good.
Right. So, we got about 5 minutes left. I'll just shout it out one more time. 760-454-8852. We're talking with Chief Frank Lee from the FDNY and Craig Weincheck and Keith Stakes from the UL Fire Safety. And any questions at all, you want to give us a call, we'll try to answer it. If not, you could always, I'm sure you guys have a website. I'm sure there's lots of information on the website. I think it's easy to find UL. Just Google UL, and I'm sure you'll find all the information on the website. So I know you guys are probably exhausted. I know I'm exhausted. I've been up since about 4:30 this morning. So I think I want to thank you guys for stepping up to the plate for last minute. This was kind of on me. I kind of should have planned this a little better, but I think, you know, it was great having you on. Frank, again, thanks for always coming on and bailing me out, as usual. With that, I'm going to let you guys go. I'm going to cut you guys off, and I'm just going to wrap it up. So, Craig and Keith. Yeah, sure.
One thing before we go, I just wanted to take a minute to thank our team, you know, from Steve and Dan, you know, supporting this project, to everyone out who's been on the fire ground and the training center for us for the last 10 weeks prepping. You know, you're talking to just two of you know, 15 people that have made this series, you know, go. So we really appreciate everyone's long hours out here, and we couldn't do it without the entire team.
So I heard there's a rumor I heard that next time we come down that myself and Frank will have the nozzle in a backup. Is there any truth to that rumor?
Yeah, I think that's going to depend on who gets the line to the front door quicker.
Well, I've seen Frank in action. You better be on your game. Let's just put it that way.
We'll see you on Friday.
Thank you, guys, and your whole team. You're right on. Your whole team is excellent. We appreciate it. You know, you have the long days. We appreciate you taking the time out of your busy night and day to talk with us tonight.
Thanks for having us on.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks again. I'm gonna say goodbye, and then I'm gonna stay with Frank for a second, and I'm gonna wrap it up. All right, Frank, you're still with me.
I am.
Frank, okay, great. So, it's you know, I think it's like there's so many questions I didn't even know what to ask. You know, like I'd have to think about it if I had, you know, there's like a million questions I want to ask these guys. But I guess the long and short of it is that we're just going to have to wait till the experiments are done. And then, like always, they'll come out with a report. And then I'm sure, you know, we'll act
yeah,
on
and you
it
have and them on for that. Yeah, that's all, you know. These guys, listen,
bring them back.
They're amazing. They never say no.
Right.
You know?
So with that, Frank, I'll let you go. I know you've been up early too, like myself. So again, congratulations again on your promotion. You're doing a tremendous job with this remote tactical. I mean, it was your vision, and I think I could see this is just the start of it. You know, I think this is going to be around for a long time. So with that, I'll say goodnight to Frank. Frank,
so
I'm going to let you go, and I will see you back on campus.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
have a good night.
Okay. Ciao.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That was great. That was, you know, it's really hard to put into words what I saw. You know, it was, they actually built a house, soup to nuts. I mean, it was just like you could live in the thing. And they burned it. And it acted just, you know, they replicate exactly what you would see at a regular structure of fire. I'm going to post some pictures on my Instagram and my Twitter and my Facebook, the 1st 2 Battalion Chief. I'll post those pictures, and you could just see what was going on. But I think some good stuff's going to come out of this. I think, you know, we were taught, it's a very emotional thing when you do a search and you find a victim. It's almost to the point, someone said the other day, like, is this really happening? Like, is this real? Did I really find this person? Because I think sometimes we almost are like shocked that we found somebody, you know, and our first gut reaction is just to, you know, run out the door the way we came in, or whatever it is, if we came in off the fire escape or a portable ladder or an aerial ladder. And I think what's going to happen is that we're starting to see the effect of the toxicity of the gases that we're dragging our victims through. And even something as simple as if we're taking them out chest height, or if it's, you know, bringing them out at floor level, the tremendous difference in the amount of gases that the the victims are being exposed to. So I am sure to have these fellas on again, and I would say I'll give you all a heads up when I bring them back. But I was very grateful to be part of that on Sunday. It was quite an eye-opener. I learned quite a few things that day. So without further ado, be safe out there, and I'll see you next time on the radio.